170 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today and hopefully tomorrow is Jason Sturzik of Agent Palmer. Welcome to the show, Jason, or Palmer, however you want to be called.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, this was fun.
We haven't done it yet.
But I did but doing the homework and watching the film was the fun part. Like, I mean, this is fun too, but like, it's not like you're like, I'll read this book that you may not like. No, it's like, no, I got to watch a classic.
That's true. That's very true. And hopefully I'll get you converted into liking movie by minute podcasts that you haven't necessarily listened to before.
Well,
you know, that it's really going to take up a lot of your time.
We'll see.
Which I know that you and I both know that the two of us have so much free time on our hands. So why not? You know?
Yeah. Let's just throw another podcast on the queue.
Exactly. All right. So episode 170, and I'm still surprised that I've made it this long. I mean, 170 minutes of a movie. That's a hell of a long time. We're at the 2 hours and 50 minutes. That's just absurd. And especially this was my first Movies by Minute podcast.
I mean, go big or go home, right?
That's true. All right. So episode 170 begins with Ramsey making eye contact with Von Luger and goes all the way till we get to see Hiltz entering the cooler again.
Again.
You know, he hasn't been in the cooler at all throughout the entire movie. So I guess they figured for the third to last minute, we might as well put him back in the cooler.
Yeah.
Or put him in the cooler. Because then we can't call him the cooler king.
Well, I mean... But he was in twice already, so...
Yes.
I mean...
Twice? He was in three times.
Oh, yeah. So...
He's been three times. He went in because the first time when he showed that he had the wire clippers on the first day.
Yep.
Then when he and Ives got out, and then they got caught.
And then for the reconnaissance.
Their tunneling, yeah. And then for the reconnaissance was in number three. So,
yeah.
But we'll get there. It's the end of the minute. We have a little bit of time till we get there.
Yeah.
So, as we saw yesterday, everyone is pretty much upset at Von Luger for the way that he has handled everything and the fact that he allowed 76 prisoners to somehow get out of his camp. So, he is in big trouble. So, yesterday we saw that he was being escorted out of his office. No. Ramsey is, and all of the prisoners are sitting there watching Von Luger being escorted out of his office and into his car. So that's pretty much how this starts. Now, first of all, throughout the entire movie, we've seen the relationship that Ramsey and Von Luger have with one another. The two of them have a lot of respect for the other. They are both colonels. They both know what's going on. And they both want to have somewhat peaceful relationships throughout the whole thing, but they both still have obviously different views on what that means by having a peaceful relationship.
Yes. Well, and I mean, look, that this minute starts with that look, the actor Hans Messamer, that look is so many things, right? Like it's respect, but it's also like remorse. Like it's a guy respectfully looking back because like they had those conversations earlier on where it's like, this is my job. Our job is to make it hard for you, not to just lay down and make it easy.
Right.
So there's
instead
a respect.
Instead of just sitting out the war comfortably.
But there's a respect there. But I also feel like in that one look like off at the very beginning, like it's also like a remorse, like, you know, I know where I'm going. Like, this is a guy who's clearly headed to the Russian front.
Yeah.
And while it's kind of like just an underline, because I feel like they don't, you know, at this point, you're just presumed based on what we've talked about before. And I guess knowing, the Hogan's Heroes of it all, the threat always being like sending, you know, somebody to the Russian front. It's like,
well, it's
okay.
Not just Hogan's Hero. They had it here also. I mean, you had,
well, it's everywhere.
He goes to the Russian front, you know,
but that look is so like, I feel like this minute has two of the best looks in the movie, right?
Yes.
Like it's that look right there. and then the look we're going to get to in a moment,
right?
It's just those looks mean so much because there's out of context. I think McQueen's look means something, but Hans is everything about in the moment and of that time, and it you feel it.
Right. I mean, I think Von Luger's look here also basically says that he feels betrayed. You know, he knows where he's going. He's not happy with what they did because, you know, the fact that they got 76 out is what's basically screwed him over. So yeah. You're right. There is remorse on his face, but there is also betrayal. He's like, I thought we had a deal. you're not gonna cause me problems. We're gonna sit out the war nice and quietly, and that's it. But apparently, that is not what happened.
No.
You're right. The looks are everything, and I mean they're both great actors, both Hans Mesmer and James Donnell, who I always love in Bridge on the River Kwai, because he's just great in there. It's madness. But. So the two of them, we're not going to see very much. We're not going to see Von Luger at all after this minute. And I think, this is actually the last minute of Ramsey also. So the two of them, this is their farewell looks to each other and to us as the viewers, I guess.
Yeah.
And then the car just drives off.
Yep.
And then we see McQueen in the background playing with his handcuffs. You see him moving his hands back and forth. You know, maybe they're trick handcuffs or something like that. Who knows? You know, he's trying to do a magic trick. You know, you have the rings that you quickly put together and pull apart.
Yeah.
Things like that. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that's actually what Hiltz is doing. Yeah, that's the type of guy that he is.
I mean, Hiltz, it's funny too, because like Hiltz is like the range of emotions that he goes through in this little, like from the last minute to this minute, where it's like he learns kind of about everything else, and then he sees what just happened, and now he sees, you know, his, I guess to me, it's Hiltz looking at his next opponent, right?
Yes.
Like a video game, like next up,
exactly.
Like, oh, you beat that boss. Now you're on to the next boss, right?
That's right. Like, just, what can you do with this next one? That's right. 100%. I think that is a great analogy. I didn't even think of that. You see, I need someone like you who's a gamer who can talk about these type of things. You know?
Well, it's also too, like, there's like McQueen's smile is not just a smirk. It like it's a smirk that then morphs into a smile, right? And it kind of gives you this idea that like he kind of enjoys it.
Yeah, of course he enjoys it. That's the impression we always get from Hiltz.
Yeah.
Hiltz is a guy who enjoys everything that he does. You don't see him stress out about anything.
No, I mean, it's just, I mean, this is, so I've been trying to think about this since I saw it. I'm pretty sure this is McQueen at the top of his game, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. This is what put him over the top. After this movie, you know, he was in Bullet. He was eventually in Towering Inferno and stuff like that. I mean, but this is the movie that everyone realized that Steve McQueen is a star.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, he does it. There's no question about it. Most people, when you think of The Great Escape, are going to think of Steve McQueen. Most people, when you think of the best motorcycle scene in any movie, even though it's not part of the real story, you're going to think of this movie. This is, it's become such an iconic both movie and scene. So it's just great. It just really works well. So then we get a shot of Hiltz, who is now lifting up his hands for them to take off the handcuffs that he has. And I always find it really interesting that he still gets to keep his ring. You know, obviously this isn't Schindler's List or anything like that, but I mean,
he still gets,
you know, they're letting him keep jewelry.
All right, but don't let me get ahead. But like, we're going to talk about the baseball glove, which is a huge thing for me.
We'll get there. Don't jump that far ahead.
Okay, fine.
We still have 40 seconds till we get there.
Well, so we're getting to the walk, right?
First of all, no. For that, we still get Hiltz looking at Posen, as you were talking about a little earlier, he's sizing up Posen. We know Posen from this whole movie. I mean, he's not a new character. So it must be that he is the new commandant, or he's at least in charge until they bring the new commandant, because he was basically, you think throughout the movie that he's just an aide to Von Luger.
Yeah.
But it's possible.
In the army, just like in a lot of things, the cliche is like next man up. And like, unless they brought in a replacement commandant when they took the other guy out, then the second in command, the aide, the whoever is going to step up at least temporarily.
Right.
So.
Correct. That's definitely true.
Although like he's sizing him up going like, well, I got your boss gone. Like, what are you going to do?
That's right. So Posen just looks at him. Then they take off the handcuffs. And as you talked about earlier, he gives that smirk. And they basically face off with one another. He takes a couple steps forward, takes another quick look. And then he does his walk, as you were talking about.
That walk is all confidence, and it builds as he walks further, like perfectly with the music.
Yes.
And what I find interesting there is this is an era where like it wasn't so easy to go picture perfect and score with the film, right? Because like we're not talking about digital movie making where like I can run that clip back and make sure that the strings come in at just the right moment when he starts that stride. But like the music is not just in time, but in mood with like as he walks.
It's marching music.
It's marching music, but it's like there's a confidence to it because his walk, like that stride, it's not just a normal walk. Like he gets more and more confident as it goes along.
Right, and Elmer Bernstein did the music after. I mean, it's not as if they had the orchestra sitting there doing it as he's walking. Anyway, I mean, even before digital time, they were doing that. But, I mean, Bernstein, I've said this so many times over all of these episodes that I've done, that Bernstein just does such an amazing job with the music in this movie.
It's, you know what, it's, this is not the right feel what's the word? It's not the right.
It doesn't feel like a movie from the 60s.
No. The music that Bernstein does is look, and I'm not saying this just because they're both military films, but like Stripes comes to mind when I hear the particular score. Right. Okay. And to me, I understand that they're both going for a similar type of score. They're both military films, but like just this, especially this moment, feels Stripes to me, because Stripes as a score is playful and marching, and this particular moment makes it feel playful, like a cat that's ready to play with its prey.
Okay, there is something to that. I definitely can agree with you on that. And yeah. I mean, it's Bernstein who did both, so he was somewhat influenced, I guess, by doing this. I mean, I remember hearing, this must have been months ago when I was doing research on this, that this was a tune that Bernstein had in his head ever since he was a kid. And this movie was the first time that he was able to realize it because it just worked so well with it. So wow. Now I have to go back and re-listen to the score of Stripes to see how similar it is to this. So yes. For all those listeners out there, go you can do that too. You can go check that out.
Yeah.
So basically, he comes in, starts striding into the compound. We get a nice long shot of him as he's walking. And as you said, we see him marching along. He walks past all of the prisoners, and the prisoners all start smiling at him. And even Ramsey gives him a little bit of a smile as he walks by him.
Yeah.
Which says a lot. I mean, the question is Ramsey's smile because he's happy that Hiltz is alive and back specifically? Is he happy because every man counts? Is he happy because we know that there were 50 that were killed? So, all right, they've for some reason chosen to give us another one back. I don't know.
So this is my question, because that smile makes me feel like Hiltz is now taking over for Roger. Like, that's the only thing I can think of, which is why that's like, yes, all of the things you said are absolutely true. But with Roger gone, who are the brain? Who's the brains now? And I feel like Hiltz is now going to step into that role a bit in terms of planning. I mean, look, he's gonna be on his own for quite a while. we don't know what this cooler sentence is, but like all we know is like, you know, Roger's gone. So like, who's in charge now? And I feel like as a leader, it's Hiltz.
Okay, well, right? The like movie leaves it very ambiguous, and I mentioned this earlier this week, I believe, that in the original script, it meant they have a little scene there where Soren starts talking to James Garner, and he says to him that he says, "I've been appointed the new Big X, so we're having a meeting tonight." You know, and I always felt that that scene should have been kept in, because it would show even more that they haven't given up. You know, Roger's dead. Roger's dead, but we're still moving along. We're not.
I think the smile, but doesn't the smile take care of the we're not giving up? I mean, we don't. I mean, you and I get to speculate on who would be in charge again, right? But like, overall, I think we can't give up hope. You know,
right?
Look who we got back. We're still going to go do our thing,
right? Okay, that could be. Again, the movie leaves it very ambiguous, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I that's probably one of the reasons why they cut it out of the script. Maybe Steve McQueen actually asked them to cut it out because he wanted people to think that he's the one in charge. I don't know.
Could, yeah. Or
as,
it's, you know,
we
almost
can speculate
a 3-hour
as much as we want.
Look, it's almost a 3-hour movie. Something had to go, right?
Well, I always bring this up. There was a anecdote that I heard on one of the commentaries that John Sturgis was telling the story that when they first showed the movie to the executives, so it was a 3-hour movie, and some of the executives complained and said, "You got to cut some stuff out." And he said, "There's nothing to cut out. This is a movie that is building blocks. You need every scene in order to explain what's going on later." And they said, no, you got to cut something out. They said, "Cut out the whole scene where we get to see them trying on all the clothes." Okay, they said, we don't really need to have them trying on the clothes. You don't need the scene with Griffith. Just take it out." So he said, "All right." He cut it out. And then they had a screening for a whole bunch of other executives. And then a few executives came over to him afterwards and said, "Wow, this was such a great movie. But can you tell me, where did they get all the clothes that they were wearing during the escape?" And then Sturgis went over to the executives that told him to cut it and said, "It's going back in." So I love that story. I know I've told it a few times, but still, it's fun.
Yeah.
And then we get Hiltz continuing with his walk. He actually acknowledges Ramsey. He says, "Sir." Now, one of the things that's interesting is when you look at all the prisoners around there, you don't see Henley there. You don't see any of the others that have been returned. So the assumption is, I guess, they're in the cooler too. You know, why is Hiltz the only one who's ever going into the cooler?
Well, but the way that shot, though, they weren't in the lineup, right? Like, they had
You think they'd put Henley in there?
Maybe, but I mean,
you mean he went to go wash up, so he wasn't there,
or somewhere else, or they were being reprocessed, quote unquote.
Okay,
I guess
possible. It's very possible. Yeah. No, they're already back in the camp, so
I mean,
they're not being reprocessed.
They're already okay. Yeah.
We saw them come back into the camp, but whatever. It doesn't matter. It's just interesting. It's also possible that McQueen requested that, you know, that Garner isn't there. this is his moment. So
this is my moment.
That's right. So he continues along with his walk, and then we see Goff, our token extra, just run down, and he screams out, "Hey, Hiltz!" And he's got Hiltz's baseball glove in his hand, and then, you know, you get to see him take it, and he tosses it over to Hiltz, and Hiltz grabs it and smiles. He like catches it really well. Now, no one cares.
I just still don't understand. Like, solitary confinement, as I understand it, is supposed to be boring. And Hiltz is like, I'm gonna practice my like I'm, you know, I'm gonna pitch for the Yankees when I get back. You know, whatever it is, like because even every time he goes in with the ball and glove.
No, there's one time. Like, there's one time where he doesn't have it when he goes in after the escape. Under the dirt. That's the one time he doesn't have it. But maybe he got someone to smuggle it in for him at some point. Who knows?
But just the fact that they didn't like, it boggles my mind that at the times that he did take it in, he just carried it in.
Yeah.
Like, I know that he's not going to escape with a baseball and a glove, but I mean, it's something to do in solitary.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I went to try and look online. Now, it's a known fact, and we've already discussed this, the fact that this baseball glove is a baseball glove from the 60s, so it is very anachronistic here. This is not the baseball glove that a prisoner in Stalaglyph 3 would have had. I mean, we had a whole episode where we talked about the sports equipment, so there was a hell of a lot of sports equipment, including they had like, I think, I don't remember the number, they had like 30 leagues of baseball teams. They had so many baseball teams in the camp. So you're going to have all the equipment. There's no question about that. But this is his personal equipment, that he needs to have. So I went to look online to see if I could actually – how much it would cost to buy this type of glove. And the only thing I can find is they have actually a 1/6 size of this glove that you can get that is the replica of Steve McQueen's glove. And I think it comes with like a hand. So I wasn't sure if that's supposed to be like – a replica of Steve McQueen's hand also, which is like really creepy, but
yeah, a little bit.
So I found that you can buy it on eBay for like $30, but I'm not going to spend that money on that. I like this movie, but I don't want a miniature baseball glove with a creepy hand, you know, like the thing from the Addams Family or something like that. Who knows?
Yeah, no, I'll pass. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah.
But
I have a very old leather glove from, handed down at this point, that was an Al Kaline glove.
Ooh,
which right. puts hey, it into some context for how old
I'm Detroit there you
and it's actually behind me and it but it's
Nobody
that size
that
right it's weird it's that size
yeah.
because like gloves, you know, for all that they're now massive
yeah
like they used to be that small. So yeah, I'm still, there's a part of me that's like, I'm just always amazed when he walked in there with it. The first time and this last time.
Well, the first time he was caught like, with it, so that you can sort of say, all right, he has it on him, whatever. This time he's actually given it beforehand and no one really cares. That's the difference.
No.
He's not even given, it's thrown to him. And, yes. And it's a pretty good throw. I mean, it's edited really well. There's a reason why Webster Ferris was nominated for an Oscar for editing. It's not for this scene, obviously, but he's still a good editor. It was obviously for the jump, but still. So Hiltz continues his walk, and he walks past Goff, who smiles along. Everyone's just smiling at him. You're like, good for you that you got caught and you're going back into the cooler. Or it's actually good for you that you got caught and they didn't kill you.
To his credit, though, Hiltz was the one who did the scouting.
Yeah.
So he's the one who probably, outside of the actual digging, the scouting was probably the most important thing that could have been done.
Right.
For the escape.
I've mentioned this in the original script. Hiltz was one of the main diggers also, but they changed that in the end, which I'm glad they did, even though it makes it look like he's here in some sort of resort, you know.
Yeah.
He's on vacation. Yeah.
Well, you know, he's making the booze. Yeah, he's, you know, playing a little catch. Right. Yeah, why not?
Exactly. He's at summer camp. We discussed this in one of the first weeks, the fact that the way a lot of these guys are acting is if they're in summer camp, which I guess makes it more fun to watch. And then we get a shot of the cooler again, and we see the shadow of Hiltz, and then the minute stops. And that's what we got for this minute.
That's it.
Why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, I can be found on Twitter at Agent Palmer. You can find the blog. I'm a blogger on www.agentpalmer.com. And I am a podcaster. And you can find my podcast releases every 2 weeks on Tuesdays, wherever you're listening to this, or thepalmerfiles.com. And the blog is geeky, nerdy, sport. Well, it's kind of a general interest blog now. Movies, television, books, sports, gaming, you name it. And then
soon to be movies by minute also.
And then the podcast, it's long form conversational podcast. If you've heard of or like Mark Maron's show, that's a good litmus test for me. It's just that I'm less famous and most of my guests are also less famous.
But they aspire to be there one day.
I mean, so do I.
No, I was referring to you also.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I like where I'm at. So.
Okay. All right. That's great. While you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe to any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. You can send me an email at thegreatminute@gmail.com. Our Facebook group is The Cooler. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. And our Twitter account is greatescapemxm. Just for anyone who's paying attention, we only have 2 more episodes of this season. So as soon as we switch to season 2 on Monday, because the 2 episodes that we're going to release are actually going to come out this weekend. We're going to have 171 coming out tomorrow on Saturday, and 172, the final episode, to come out on Sunday. And then Monday, we start with a whole new season, and I'm rebranding. The show will now be called Movie Rob Minute instead of just The Great Escape Minute. And starting on Monday, we're going to be doing season 2, where we're going to be dealing with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, the 1987 comedy by John Hughes, starring Steve Martin and John Candy. So hopefully once you're finished listening to everything that we have to say about The Great Escape, you'll want to continue and listen to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles also. So, Jason, you feel like coming back for tomorrow for the penultimate episode of this podcast?
I do. I want to help you bring it home.
All right. Very good. So, until tomorrow, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.